You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kind of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to a new episode of The Effective Statistician. And today I'm super happy to have an old friend and colleague of mine here on the show. Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. I'm fine. How are you?
Very good. However, I need to say I'm not always being very good. I definitely had some tough times when I was working, really being very much stressed, and I would say at the brink of burnout quite often. And I know lots of people that do struggle with mental health during working time. You are as an expert in this area. I'm super happy to have you on the show to actually talk about this and what we can do about it from a company point of view, but even more what we as individuals can do about it. But before we dive into it, Peter, maybe you can speak a little bit about your career and how you have come across this topic and why it is so important for you.
Yes, I'm a psychiatrist and psychotherapist. I've worked in the pharmaceutical industry for a number of years, but I've also worked in psychiatric hospitals. At the moment, I work in a psychiatric practice in Frankfurt, Germany, and many of my patients suffer from anxiety, burnout, and depression. And I've come to realize that this is a major problem, not only in my patients, but also in ordinary people of the workforce that are exposed to a lot of stress in their working lives, but also in their private lives. So this is a very common problem, and it results in a lot of personal suffering in these individuals.
Can you expand a little bit on what are the symptoms that you see and what is that personal suffering?
One of the most common symptoms is anxiety. The mood goes down, the feeling of insufficiency, the self-esteem declines, there's tension, sleep problems are often present. So there's a whole lot of symptoms that can indicate that an individual is suffering from anxiety or depression.
Yeah, and the anxiety we are talking here about is not just a little bit of fear, it's really debilitating and has some big influence on your life as such and can hinder you from work. Or when you're still at work, you have this presentism that you're physically at work, but mentally just not in a shape to actually contribute, isn't it?
That's right. So what we all know is absenteeism when you're away from work on sick leave. But if you're anxious about losing your job or if you're anxious about not performing well, there's a tendency to appear at work and be present. That's where the word presentism comes from. You're present at work, but actually because you're impaired by the mental problems that you're having at the moment, that you actually cannot really do productive work. Moreover, it's not just about work. It's also about your private life, because with burnout, anxiety, and depression, your private life is severely impaired, and it has an influence on partnerships, on your family life, on your free time, your friends, and there's a strong tendency to withdraw, to reduce your social contacts, to retreat into a cave, into a depressive cave, as it were, and be anxious about coming out and becoming active and connecting with the people around you. So that can cause a huge problem for you, not only in your working life, but also in your private life.
Yeah, and that is results even into physical problems. So there's also quite a lot of physical problems, somatic problems that come with it, isn't it?
Absolutely. More often than not, depression is associated with physical symptoms. Usually it's pain, or quite often it can be pain like headaches, back pain, neck pain, muscle pain. Those are typical symptoms of depression. And the interesting thing is that these seem to be physical symptoms, and they are physical symptoms in a way, because the pain is real, the pain is there. But the cause is actually stress, depression, which in turn causes anxiety about your state of health, anxiety about whether your situation will ever get better. Often there's the idea that this will never get better, and I will never find a way out of this terrible situation I am in.
Yeah, and so hopelessness as a symptom is probably the worst thing. You know, that you are in this depressed mood, in this high state of anxiety, very stressed. You feel a high tension in your body. And with the hopelessness, you even think about it as being constant for the rest of life. And
that's right. That's what I hear quite often. The question, will this ever get better? And I try to reassure the patients that yes, with treatment, this will get better. But the suffering is so bad and the situation seems so hopeless that often patients will not really believe me. And I sense that. And I try to encourage them. I try to show that eventually there will be light at the end of the tunnel, even if at this moment they do not see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. And I have been in such situation, and I can tell you it is a very bad feeling and can even lead to suicidal thoughts. And so it's really a severe problem. How is it in terms of the prevalence of such symptoms?
The prevalence of burnout and depression, basically burnout is a fancy word for depression. So in the psychiatric sense, it's the same thing. It's a severe depression. The possibility for treatment is important. What you just said about suicidal thoughts, that underlines the importance of seeking treatment. So even if you think there is no way out of the situation, I will never get out of the situation, I'm anxious about asking for help, anxious about speaking about the terrible suffering I'm going through, it's important to connect, to speak about it, to seek help, talk with your relatives about it, mention it to your friends. Seek help, see a psychiatrist, see a psychotherapist to seek help, because there is help. Depression can be treated. It's more common, and you're not alone if you're suffering from depression. Unfortunately, depression is very common, more common in women than in men. That's a statistical finding from many worldwide studies, so that's a finding that is well established. But of course, the suffering that men go through with depression is the same severe suffering that women go through. So both women and men should take these symptoms very seriously and go and seek help, because there is help. There is help and there is hope.
Don't wait too long. Yeah, this is a disease. It is not a symptom, that the sign that you're weak or insufficient or whatsoever. This is a disease like any other physical disease you can have. Yeah. And don't feel ashamed to seek help. That is, it's not your fault that you have this disease, if you have such symptoms, go seek help. And if you know someone that has these symptoms, support them in seeking help. I think that's another important point.
That's a very good point. If you sense that someone is feeling bad and may have depression, you will do nothing wrong if you approach that person in a friendly way, in an understanding and compassionate way, in a conversation, just the two of you, and ask that person how he or she is feeling. Ask that person whether he or she has a problem or a sense of hopelessness. And I'm certain that person will appreciate the question and may open up. And that could be the first step towards obtaining help and obtaining treatment in this terrible situation.
Yeah. Now, my perception is, since I started work more than 20 years ago, the pressure and the demands in the workforce have definitely changed. And I think they have very much increased. Yeah, there is, within all the different companies, resources are not that freely available anymore like they used to be. There's a lot more the saying, do more with less. Pressure that comes from the top is getting unfiltered to the bottom people, the people in the that do the heavy lifting in the trenches, so to say. And very often these kind of people need them to decide what they do and what they deprioritize. And so I think it is very important that people look after themselves, because they can't assume that their management will take care of things. And often the situation is that, and I've seen that and talked to lots of people, that they find being frustrated. They want to do a good job or maybe even a perfect job, and have the ability or have the feelings that they need to work very long hours for that. And even then, the to-do list is endless. I think probably for some shorter period of time, you can stand that. But sooner or later, I think things will, from a mental health perspective. In order to stay out of that, I think one of the key things is, of course, seeking help if you have symptoms. But there's also a couple of things you can do to prevent getting into that stage. And the key words that we want to talk about today is self-management. Now, Peter has invested quite a lot of time in doing research about it, wrote books about it, has seen patients, hundreds of patients to help them. And so I'm super glad that we can talk about these couple of different aspects of self-management. By the way, Peter has also collated a long list of tips that we will put in the show notes, tips that you can do in your day-to-day work and also outside of your work, but especially in day-to-day work, so that you take care of yourself and of self-management. Okay, let's go through these five big domains that you have identified as kind of areas of self-management. What is the first one that we should talk about?
The first one is self-awareness and true perception. I think it's very important to realize what the situation is that you are in. It is also important to realize the reality outside, what's going on around you, so that you have a good grasp on reality, your own internal reality, but also the reality around you. So you can identify problems and also identify, more importantly, solutions to your problems. Because Alexander just mentioned a very serious problem. It's a real dilemma. The increasing pressure we are under, increasing stress that we are exposed to, and increasingly less opportunities to cope with this stress. And so we're stuck in a dilemma. And if we want to wait for the world to change, we can wait for a very long time. The world will not change. So unfortunately, we're stuck in a situation where we have to try and make the best of our situations. The good message is, of course, the good news, we have options. to improve our situations. These opportunities may not be perfect, but we do all have small ways of changing things. And that's what I'd like to talk about in the workshop that focuses on self-awareness and true perception.
Yeah. By the way, you will find links to the workshop that Peter is talking about in the show notes. Peter will run 5 workshops together with the Effective Statistician as part of the Medical Data Leaders community, which is a community that helps you to improve your influencing skills. And part of that is also to make sure that you're in the right state and that you can actually influence. Because if you can't take care of yourself, you won't be able to take care of someone else. Now, self-awareness, I think, is a firsthand, it sounds like pretty obvious. But I know for myself that you can ignore things for quite a long time, sleep problems or being stressed, and then using techniques that are maybe not the best in terms of coping with stress. Yeah. Alcohol, or let alone other drugs. Yeah. That you take just to cope with the stress, or other unhealthy behavior that may lead to short-term relief from the stress, but longer-term does have a price. So that's the first part. What is the next part that is important?
Yes, the second workshop is about personal relationships and social networks. We're not alone in the world. We have people around us in the work setting, but also in our private lives. There are people around us that are more or less close to us, colleagues, friends, our family, our partner, and so on. So the question is, how do we communicate? How do we deal with other people around us? How do we regulate our personal relationships? How do we react in times of conflict? How do we solve conflicts? That's the topic of the second workshop, our network of social relationships.
I can see both that this network is important from managing conflicts in such a way that it doesn't have a negative impact on your well-being. And a conflict does not necessarily mean that there's yelling and shouting and screaming. Yeah, I have seen many conflicts where people don't say anything and just try to eat up all their frustration and their fear, their anxiety into themselves, which kind of just worsens the symptoms. The other part is, of course, the positive relationships. These can be a huge resources for you for personal well-being.
Absolutely. I'd like to underline, we all have to compromise. So it's not about autism. We have to compromise. We have to communicate. First of all, it's not enough just not to communicate and hope the conflict goes away. We have to solve conflicts. And usually both parties in a conflict have to move. They have to move towards one another in order to be able to solve conflicts. So that's one very important aspect. Solving conflicts, communication, improving your communication skill. This also involves empathy, of course, taking the point of view of the other person and trying to understand where they come from in the conflict, but the other way around, also trying to explain why I think my perspective is valid, and to be able to discuss the conflict and perhaps come to a solution.
Yep. That also speaks to negotiation, which is another key element that we teach in the Medical Data Leaders community. Conflict very often comes in our world on different timelines or different expectations in terms of the quality, or that you need to negotiate about resources. You don't have enough resources and you want to get more resources. Yeah. These are all conflicts that need to be resolved, and very often, yeah, that will include negotiation skills. What is the third dimension that we should take care of?
The third dimension, it's about setting priorities and planning the future. We all live towards the future, and so it's important to have an idea where I want to go. What are my goals? where do I want to be next year in 10 years' time, but also tomorrow? What are my goals for tomorrow? So there are short-term goals. There are long-term goals. It's about the future. It's about my vision for the future. It's all about the future. And without an idea of the future, I cannot have goals. I cannot determine goals. And of course, the goals determine my timelines. The future perspective or my perspective on the future is very important for regulating myself and for my own self-management.
I think that is so important because it gets you out of this reactive mode. Yeah. If you all the time at work just try to react to the tasks that are thrown at you, to the emails that come in, to the chat messages that come in, to the meeting invites that come in, to the expectations that are put on you, you get into this reactive moment mood and that you basically stand with your back against the wall. And that is a very bad situation to stay in. You know, so this is very much about coming out of this reactive mode and becoming a designer of your life.
That's very true. And I'd like to underline that because in determining goals, it's the question, are other people determining my goals or am I determining my own goals? And of course, in an active mode, I determine my own goals. Of course, I cannot dictate all goals. I have to meet demands, obviously, of ordinary life in my working environment. I have superiors that I have to satisfy. There are goals provided by the company I happen to work in or the organization I have to work in. That's clear. But I do have freedom to determine very many other goals that are not determined necessarily by other people. And I would encourage you to explore your own goals and your own idea of what a good goal is, a meaningful goal is. Ultimately, it's about the meaning of my life. You could see it in this way, the meaning of my life and my true goals that truly fulfill me, goals that are fulfilling and not just only reacting on the demands made on me by my company or my organization.
Yeah. We actually have a whole process about annual goal, how to set these annual goals, how to make sure that your company goals and your own goal, your development goal, all these are taken into account. And here's, of course, not just the business goals. It's also about personal goals. What is the next dimension?
The fourth dimension is about choice, choosing among options and making decisions. So we make decisions almost every minute in our lives, whether we get up or whether we turn off the alarm clock and continue our sleep, whether we choose tea or coffee for breakfast, trivial goals, very trivial goals, up to very important goals in my life, partnership, choosing a partner, buying real estate, buying a house, choosing a job, leaving a job. Yes. Those are very important goals. So continuously in the short term, but also in the long term, we're constantly confronted with options and we have to make choices. And some options have to require quick choices. Other options leave us more time to decide. But that's the topic of the fourth workshop, looking at the options I have and making choices.
Yeah, I think that is just thinking about it, how it is, what's the opposite of this is. You're circling around. You can't make a choice because you fear of making the wrong one. Yeah. And then you circle and circle. And making no choice, of course, is also a choice, but usually a pretty poor one. Yeah. And that can drain a lot of energy from you if you can't make choices. In situations where, of course, usually you don't have complete information, yeah? In most decisions that you take, you don't have complete information, yeah? Will this new company be really better than the old one, yeah? Will I find a new spouse if I now leave this one? All of these bigger problems. And if you are in a very bad mental state, it becomes more and more difficult to actually make choices, yeah? because just your personal energy level decreases so much that any energy to even make a choice becomes insurmountable. And being able to make choices is absolutely vital. And I'm very much looking forward to the fourth workshop that you will do about this one. Let's go to the last workshop.
Right. The final topic is about meeting challenges and acting effectively. Eventually, there comes a point when I have to come to action. I cannot think about the options endlessly. There's a point where I have to start moving and moving forward after having made a decision. The decision may be good, the decision may be bad, but eventually I have to start moving. Otherwise, I cannot change my situation. I cannot do my work. I cannot contribute to a relationship. I cannot move forward in any way unless at one point I start acting.
Yeah.
In a way, you could say this is the most important of the five dimensions. All the dimensions are important. They also interlink. They work together. But this just to say that the final dimension, the dimension of action, is extremely important. Otherwise, change cannot happen.
Yeah. This reminds me of a LinkedIn post I've recently seen from Peter. He asks himself, five frogs sitting on at the side of a river. Four decide to spring into the river. How many frogs are sitting on the side of the river? Five. Because they just decided. That doesn't mean that they actually did it.
That's very good.
Yeah. And this underlines the importance that there's a big difference between deciding to do something and actually doing it. Yeah. There's probably lots of big things that you at one point decided to do. Maybe on New Year's Eve that you decided to do them, but did you actually do them throughout the year? Yeah. Were you persistent in doing these kind of different things? And keeping to your commitments is very important. Now, there's also social interactions can help you with this, accountability partners, forming habits so that moving forward and doing things that are good for you repetitively with less effort, is habits are really important.
Yes, I agree. And one more aspect to action. The moment is now is the best moment to act. We only act in the present, the future. That's our plans. That's our decision maybe to act, but we can only act now. So this is the moment to start moving forward.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of action because from action, you also learn and you can adjust. You don't learn from planning so much. You learn much more from taking action.
Yes, and you will make mistakes, and everyone makes mistakes. But the thing with mistakes is you can learn from the mistakes. And you can, as like you fall down, you can get up and move forward again. So that's what you do if you fail, or if you make a bad decision, or if your action is not effective. You just start, get up and start again, or move forward again. Keep going. Don't stop.
Yeah. So now we went through the five dimensions of self-management, which will help you to better manage your work, but also your private life, and help you to stay away from the bad symptoms that we talked about at the beginning. Yeah. Depression or burnout, another kind of euphemism of depression, anxiety, and other of these disorders that can really lead to big problems. I myself suffer from depression for many years, and at the time it got really bad that I even went into a hospital. And I really want to tell you, seek help earlier. Yeah, it is such important. Do it for you, but also do it for your loved ones, because they also suffer very often from these mental health conditions.
I couldn't agree more. So it's important to seek help, reach out, and speak about how you're feeling.
Yeah. And take care of yourself. Yeah. follow these self-management tips. Check out the show notes where Peter shares all of his, I think, notes, 100 tips that you can have on self-management. Yeah. Thanks so much, Peter, for this very important episode. It's probably one of the most important episodes that I ever recorded in these more than 400 episodes. And it was great to have you. I'm pretty sure this wasn't the last episode that we talked about self-management.
Thank you, Alexander. Thank you for having me.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped with the show in the background. And thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.